used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
I mean, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Show, Western Canada's only radio program focusing on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is CFRO 100.5 FM Co-op Radio, Vancouver, Canada. Today is Friday, March 3rd, 2018. For the next hour, I am your host, Jillian Walters, and I am joined in the studio today by our vegan animal rights advocate hosts, Allison Cole and Jen Dobell.
Hi there.
Hi.
Welcome to our International Women's Day show. Our feature interview coming up in about 14 minutes is with Connie Spence. She is a solo female vegan activist known for shining a Batman light onto walls all over the United States. Her Facebook Live posts watch like a reality TV show. After over 75 projections, numerous conversations, 35 police interactions, Vegan Batgirl has become an expert at people's defense mechanisms. Connie will tell us about her vegan journey, the creation of the Vegan Batlight, and what the future holds for this uber activist.
Yeah, so Jen and I wanted to talk about what we were up to last weekend. Jen, you were able to attend with me for your very first ever Canadian Health Foods Association show, otherwise known as CHFA West, that took place in downtown Vancouver last week. And what it is, it's a trade show where retailers and manufacturers and distributors are coming to showcase their new products, a lot of food products mostly, and also personal care products. And we go around and we kind of see what's coming out and show what our favorite, what I did is we posted some photos on our Facebook of what our favorite vegan finds were of this year. And I would say that out of the 750 exhibitors there, that a lot of them, what would you say were the percentage that were actually plant-based?
I should have counted because it felt like... are we including the liquids, though? Because those are obviously going to
sure.
be vegan anyways. There's so many kombucha
well,
stands,
we have
right?
To, we have to count the kombuchas.
Okay, so many kombucha
the,
stands.
And the protein shakes.
But I would say when it comes down to the food, probably 50% of it was vegan. And I definitely noticed that there were people who were not vegan that were jumping on the vegan bandwagon because they know it's becoming profitable. And to me, that's great. That means that they are recognizing that this is a movement that is growing.
Yeah, absolutely. We had a vegan entrepreneur on the show a couple weeks ago. And I want to say that I just feel like we need to support these businesses that are coming in who want to make their products available. And I just wanted to give a shout out to a couple of my favorite products that are coming up. I really appreciated, we went to a stall that had vegan pet food. It's called Because Animals. And I love the photo that the person there, the owner, we spoke to him. He had a banner there at his display that just has this beautiful photo of just a dog and a cat looking out into the sunset. Because Animals. And
that's nice.
And he creates cat and dog supplements that are all plant-based and vegan dog food, and I think that's just wonderful. Another favorite of mine was there's an All Meat Lovers Day of Cheese pizza coming out.
Mm-hmm. So it's got that, like, was good.
Yeah, well, we had a couple of pizzas, right? There's mm-hmm. another one called Serafina, which I posted on our Facebook as well, and that's, I've never heard of that brand before. I think that's actually just like maybe a regular brand that is coming out with a vegan option of a pizza,
true.
Which I appreciate, actually, that these non-vegan companies are making, they, as you said, they're recognizing a need for this in our market, and they are putting the options out there. And I have to say, too, is when we went to try, they were giving all kinds of sampling, right, at mm-hmm. all the different booths. And sometimes they would, it would be like a nacho, but they wanted to put some cheese on it to give us a taste. And sometimes they would have vegan cheese.
That was amazing.
Yeah. So they really are recognizing it. What were some of your favorites, Jen?
Well, all of the cheese, all the vegan cheeses were really, really good. And I'm noticing a difference. I'm actually now going to say, I never say this, I like Daya cheese now. They finally improved on it. So I would say to anyone out there who says, I can't be vegan because of cheese, which is a big portion of the population, This isn't true anymore. Go to Choices or Whole Foods where they sell vegan cheese. It's exactly the same price and almost exactly the same taste, if not better.
Yeah, and I want to say, too, there was that company called Dairy It's Not Necessary.
Yeah,
what a great name for a company.
That was really good. They had a feta, even.
They had a feta cheese and the most amazing brie cheese, and it's coming out in stores soon.
Mm-hmm.
And Field Roast is having some new products as well, right?
That's speaking of that, a new all-vegan cheese shop just opened in Vancouver.
Yeah,
in 2 hours.
I'm going to go check it out tomorrow.
Yeah.
Hopefully I can get some cheese. So, yeah, so those were just some of our finds for the CHFA show last week. And you can go on our Facebook page if you want to find out more and see pictures at Animal Voices Vancouver.
Yeah, I wanted to bring up, because it's International Women's Day coming up, the fact that there's the AR movement is made up of about 80% women, yet most of the visual people that we see are male in the higher positions or on social media, I find.
Mm-hmm. It is true. So your interview today is actually featuring a female that is doing a lot in the movement.
Yeah. Allison?
Well, so from what I understand, I go to animal rights conferences a lot, as you know, every year, and that's often a topic of some of the feminist, I would say, geared talks that are at the conference, and there are a few. They try to provide a spectrum of different topics and different viewpoints, and I think from what I see is there's a lot of women that are actually out in the movement doing the actual work. So I can recognize that for sure. As far as the leaders in the movement, I'm not too sure about that. I would say we're leaders in the movement,
mm-hmm.
right? It's actually Animal Voices is all women run.
Mm-hmm.
Not that we want to be. We have a mirror too. And but I mean, yeah, like, so you, Jillian, you and Jenna are always on the front lines. What are you seeing in terms of that, in terms of gender roles, or do you have an opinion on that?
It's definitely a sea of women, for sure.
There are a lot of us.
Where are all the men?
I don't know. I mean, generally, I find that women are naturally quite compassionate. And I'm not saying that men aren't, but mm-hmm. I'm saying I think that's why it draws in more female activists, right? Wouldn't you say?
So what it starts first is with the intention, and then from that pool of people, it's like, okay, it's mostly women who are left, so those are the ones that are going out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, of course, I do see males involved as well,
mm-hmm.
which is great. We can't discount them, but yeah, I mean, from all the years that I've been active in this movement, we always say it's like, it feels like it's 90% females, right, who
mm-hmm.
are doing everything.
It mm-hmm. does. Yeah, and it's important to recognize everyone and all the work that they're doing, no matter what, whether they're out there on the streets and they're very visible, or whether those people that are working on their computers a lot. There's activism comes in so many forms.
That's
and everyone's
right.
Working in their own way. So now we have some news. So for those of you paying attention to the issue of declining dairy sales worldwide, here's a story that highlights the desperation and the deception of the dairy industry, although this has been going on for decades. Formula milk companies are continuing to use aggressive, clandestine, and often illegal methods to target mothers in the poorest parts of the world to encourage them to choose powdered milk over breastfeeding, a new investigation shows. A recent investigation in some of the most deprived areas of the Philippines found that Nestle and three other companies offering doctors, midwives, and local health workers free trips to lavish conferences, meals, tickets to shows, and the cinema, and even gambling chips, earning their loyalty. This is a clear violation of Philippine law. Representatives from Nestle, Abbott, Mead Johnson, and Wyeth, now owned by Nestle, were described as a constant presence in hospitals in the Philippines, where only 34% of mothers exclusively breastfeed in the first 6 months. Here they reportedly hand out infant nutrition pamphlets to mothers, which appear to be medical advice, but in fact recommend specific formula brands and sometimes have money-off coupons. Hospital staff were also found to be recommending specific formula brands in lists of essential purchases handed to new mothers. Targeted advertising on Facebook and partnerships with influential mummy bloggers means mothers are being exposed to more unregulated formula promotion than ever before. At the same time, powerful lobby groups have been working to curtail government legislation regulating formula marketing and promotion in the Philippines and all across the world. All companies have rejected the allegations and deny any wrongdoing. Back in the day, the distinction was simple. Animals are meat and plants are not. But now it's getting a lot more complicated thanks to cultured or what some might call fake meat. Companies like Impossible Foods and Beyond Meat are using science labs and farms rather than animal meat to create products that will rival traditional grilling staples like burgers and hot dogs. The U.S. Cattlemen's Association is looking to draw a line in the sand and launch what could be the first salvo in a long battle against plant-based foods. Earlier this month, the association filed a 15-page petition with the U.S. Department of Agriculture calling for an official definition for the term beef and more broadly meat. While at this time alternative protein sources are not a direct threat to the beef industry, we do see improper labeling of these products as misleading, said the association's policy and outreach director. Not everyone sees it that way. Ethan Brown, founder and CEO of Beyond Meat, said consumers already know what they're looking for when they're browsing the grocery store aisles, but he doesn't necessarily see the petition as a bad thing. He says, "I think it could actually help us more than it could hurt us because it starts the national dialogue around what really is meat and if the origin of meat really matters to the consumer." We have time for one more story. Reducing meat production and meat eating has the potential to avert climate catastrophe. That sounds dramatic, but consider the facts. Livestock farming is responsible for as much as 14.5% of global greenhouse gas emissions, higher than all forms of transport combined. And a recent report from the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy revealed that the top five meat and dairy corporations have higher greenhouse gas emissions than oil giant Exxon. Hemp seeds are a great alternative to meat. They can be grown almost anywhere, require low amounts of fertilizer, herbicides, or pesticides, and need very little water, land, and maintenance. Despite the potential for farmers and consumers alike, the very small percentage of agricultural land is used for growing plant protein crops. For farmers, protein crops can be incorporated into sustainable crop rotation systems, help shift away from intensive chemical-reliant monocultures. They also have the rare ability to take nitrogen from the air and capture it in the soil, reducing the need for expensive and environmentally damaging nitrogen fertilizers. For consumers, protein crops offer a more affordable source of protein than meat, with many health benefits, including being a good source of iron and fiber. I'm loving this. The future is really vegan. We are getting
2018.
There.
2018.
Yeah, I feel like we're just riding a wave of success right now.
Last year when I was making the Overpass Light Brigade piece for Empty the Tanks, I started to think, how could we get the vegan message out to as many people as possible? I had this idea of projecting the undercover footage of the slaughterhouses in Canada and have that projected on a Costco wall so people coming in and out would see it. I started researching projectors, and that is when I found the work of Connie Spence, a.k.a. Vegan Batgirl. I was really impressed at the work she was doing, a single woman traveling the U.S. projecting non-graphic messages on a variety of public spaces. Messages such as, fact or fiction, 99% of the 60 billion animals sent to slaughter each year are under 1 year old. Go vegan. Hashtag VBL. Connie's legal preparation and ability to engage with a variety of people, including many police interactions, with a sense of calm was also inspiring. I am so excited to have her on the show and to find out more about her unique vegan activism. Welcome, Connie.
Hey, Jillian. How's it going?
Good.
Thanks for having me.
No, it's great to have you on. Why don't you start by telling our listeners how your vegan journey began?
Yeah, actually, so I am 38 years old now. When I was 26 or 27, I had a group dinner, and at the time, I had to have a prefixed menu, and I originally planned it to be obviously a meat version of whatever that restaurant had, and three people in my group said that they were vegetarian and they couldn't eat that. And I was thinking, the snarky way that, you know, we run into non-vegans today, they're, well, why can't they just eat meat this one night, because it's making things more difficult for me. Lo and behold, that was my first sort of introduction of what vegetarian meant, and then even beyond that later, what vegan meant. So I turned vegetarian when I was 27, and I gave up everything except cheese for the huge portion of those 3 years. I actually even gave up leather shoes, and I was someone who was addicted to buying them all the time on some of those new online websites that have cheaper versions of shoes versus going into the brick and mortar store. But nonetheless, I gave up leather shoes before cheese. In 2010, my boss, who had no interest in being vegan, had a heart attack, and he ended up going to a bunch of Western doctors, and none of them really helped heal him. So he decided, this was when I lived in Denver, he decided to go to a Boulder doctor who was holistic, who told him that, will you do whatever I tell you to do, because you are on the path to having a second heart attack if you don't. And my boss said, whatever, doc, I'll pay $500 per pill if you want me to. And the doctor didn't give him any information, except he said, go vegan. We'll make an appointment for you in 6 weeks. We'll check your test results, and you'll be on your way. And my boss was confused because he didn't even understand veganism and had to find out for himself. And in that 6 weeks, my boss healed himself from what looked like a second heart attack would have been, something that would have happened in his life, and that Western doctors wouldn't do anything about but give him pills and tell him that it was hereditary and ran in his family. That was the change for me going all in to vegan, because I realized that I realized the industries that surround us with consumerism of, eating also end up taking our money with pills instead of healing us. And so it was a huge eye opener. And so I turned vegan in June 2010.
Wow.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So it's been about 7.5 years now being vegan. So I am a vegan that all my beauty products and household products are vegan. It's not just a convenience thing. The last thing that I have is my 2013 used vehicle has a leather hybrid seat. And so my next vehicle, that I get, I would, pay the extra for cloth seats. But outside of that, every single product that is in my house is vegan. My dogs eat vegan. Beauty products are vegan, laundry detergent, everything.
That's so cool that you've made the total 100% switch over. Yeah. How did the idea of the vegan Batman light begin?
So I actually have led a career for the last 15 years in advertising, and advertising sort of switched from just being, TV, billboard, and radio advertising into internet advertising. So my focus is in internet data and internet advertising at this stage. I was dipping my toes into activism about 2 years ago, and a lot of the activism going on at that time and still today was gathering groups together on like a Saturday or Sunday to go march somewhere with signs. Mm-hmm. And what I felt like struggled with is that these events required a lot of people to attend, and they could only happen, one or two days a week when groups of people could get together. And so I was always trying to figure out, there has to be a way that wouldn't cost a lot of money all the time to be able to, have a bigger impact. Because at the end of the day, it's about eyeballs and it's about a message. It doesn't have to be about how many activists get together.
Right.
And so about a little over a year ago in November, when President Trump was elected in the United States, somebody put a light projector in a hotel that had a profanity that said F Trump. And at the time I saw it, I was like, oh my gosh, that is amazing. And then if you read the article, it said that the police and the hotel actually couldn't stop the person because light isn't vandalism, and he was not on their private property. His equipment was somewhere else. And I mean, that moment it clicked. I'm not in the industry of lighting and projectors and any of that to even know where to start, but I'm like, I have to figure this out. At that time, I had a friend who was actually in the film industry in Los Angeles when I lived in Los Angeles, and he said, you know what? I bet if you go to this film store, it's like a film DJ store, I bet they'll know what that person used and what you need. And so I went, and what I found out is, yes, they do have that equipment. It is really expensive, it's really heavy, and there's a lot of customization pieces to it that they didn't know how to do, because it's meant to be used inside, right? Mm-hmm. Inside a, let's just say inside a concert or inside a venue. It's not meant for outside. So anyways, I decided to take a gamble. The equipment was a little over $2,000. I set aside some vacation money and I was like, you know what? I'm going to try this, see what happens, you know, and go from there. And so that was when the vegan Batman light, you know, that was when it was born.
That's exciting. How did you make the slides and how did you decide on what messages to project?
Yeah, so the thing about the slides is that, you know, when this equipment is used indoors, let's say at a wedding or at, you know, a performance, they use colors for the most part and not messages. Mm-hmm. So to get messages on there, you have to pay somebody $50 to $150 to create one. And that, to me, I'd already spent $2,000. I was like, I can't afford the $50 to $150 just for one message, and who knows if it's going to look right. So there's this custom piece that allows you to do it through a printer and transparency paper. And so there's a lot of positioning that goes on with it, and there's a lot of customization to it. But it's essentially a custom gobo. Gobo is the word for the circular piece that goes in into the stage light. And so I bought that and then spent a ton of hours trying to position things and put it into this slide holder that slides into the stage light. But once you get it figured out, you know, you can do it on, you know, a printer at home, or you could probably take it to a FedEx to print it out.
Mm-hmm. How did you, like, because you got certain messages, how did you decide on what messages you were going to project?
I would say 90% of them I toy with on my own, and I just write things down all the time. Anytime I hear somebody say something that sounds really interesting or, you know, that makes people feel, I would write it down, and then I would try it out on one of those vegan Batman light events. I've gotten better at knowing what messages, you know, attract the right conversations. And I think that the fact or fiction model is my favorite because it's so non-judgmental.
Yeah.
You said one of them before, which was, you know, talking about 99% of the 60 billion animals. I have other ones, like one in Los Angeles that said fact or fiction, 7,000 animals are killed each night at one LA slaughterhouse. I have ones that talk about, you know, how long animals can be transported without food and water. The fact or fiction one works really well because, A, it doesn't throw a judgment. It's not saying you're a jerk, you're a meat eater, right? It's telling them something that is a fact. And, you know, and then the second piece is if someone's walking by, it's easy for me to say, do you think that's a fact? And obviously it is. And so it really helps drive a conversation, which any other sign that I've used before can drive a defense mechanism and then not a thoughtful conversation. So I think that a lot of it is me writing stuff down on a daily basis. And then when I decide to put something on the slide, I try to make it as factual as possible and encourage somebody to seek out more information.
Yeah, and watching your YouTube videos, it really brings people in because they want to answer the question.
Yeah, for sure. The YouTube videos. So it actually started with Facebook Live. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of these Batman lights by myself, especially now that I'm in Oklahoma, and I used Facebook Live as a safety mechanism to be able to like watch over me. Mm-hmm. I have since downloaded those and put them on YouTube. But to your point, when you ask them fact or fiction, yeah, they definitely want to, you know, learn more. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times those stats are really scary for them. They never knew. One of them says fact or fiction, each person sends 200 to 300 animals to slaughter each year. And when you ask them fact or fiction, I mean, they didn't even know that they were sending that many animals to slaughter. So for them, they're like, oh my gosh, really? And so, it's a very, those messages are very inviting for conversation.
Mm-hmm. What cities and what types of public spaces have you projected messages on?
So I started this in Los Angeles, and the very first Batman light I did was at a pig vigil at the slaughterhouse, and I projected it over their fence and into their courtyard on their wall, and that was like a huge deal. So I started in Los Angeles and lived there. I had lived in Los Angeles for 3 years, but since the Batman light, I think I lived there for like 5 months, and then I moved to Oklahoma, and on my way to Oklahoma, stopped off in Vegas, Phoenix, and then Albuquerque before I got to Tulsa. So I've done the Batman light all over Los Angeles. Probably the most famous of walls was the Staples Center wall, where the Los Angeles Lakers play and the LA Kings play. That was probably, you know, a sight to see, because the Staples Center is like 3 or 4 stories high. And during a basketball game, we had the vegan Batman light up there. So, and then in Vegas, I did it on the Vegas Strip on the Wynn Hotel, and then on this flying saucer at the mall. In Phoenix, I did it on this old abandoned mill, and then close to a pizza joint. And then in Albuquerque, I did it on a bank wall. In Tulsa, I've done it everywhere. I mean, bank walls, you name it. But as far as walls go, to a lot of people who see this online or on video, don't understand how big it is. Like, I think people think it's probably the size of a 1-story wall. It's actually, I can get it bigger than this, but the biggest blank wall I found is 7 stories high and wide. So 7 stories, if you think about it, is 70 plus feet of a giant message. Mm-hmm. And so it's huge. There's some pictures where you see a tiny door on the corner, and the Batman light's just hovering over it, and people don't even realize that's a human-sized door, you know? So, I just need to find big blank walls. Legally, what's written is that, you know, these walls, that light is not vandalism. Vandalism, and the reason it's not, is vandalism is defined as having a monetary loss or defacing something permanently. And so light doesn't do those things. Light can be turned off. And if they say that my light is illegal, then why wouldn't car headlights be illegal, right? Really, at the end of the day, the messages are more of a shadow, if you think about it. Mm-hmm. So it's like a light projecting on dark writing, which makes the writing a shadow. So it's really hard for laws to be written in that way, for it to be illegal. But with that said, as a courtesy, I try to pick businesses that are not open. Mm-hmm. So that I don't have to deal with that business owner hassling me. Right. Because my end goal isn't to upset people. My end goal is to stay live, you know, with my light on as long as possible, and have as many conversations as I can with non-vegans. And so, I guess your question was, you know, this started in LA, went to Vegas, Phoenix, Albuquerque, then Tulsa, and then I find giant blank walls to project on.
Mm-hmm. I know you recently bought a billboard, and there was an interesting story behind that. What happened with that?
Yes. I mean, so at this point, you have to understand, I don't want to, like, you know, say this in a way that it's like, it's not patting myself on the back at all. Mm-hmm. I think I'm on the radar of the dairy and meat industry, to be quite honest, mm-hmm. because with the Batman light and now this billboard, because what happened with the billboard, so in Los Angeles, buying a billboard would cost you thousands upon thousands of dollars. It is impossible. It's a giant market. There's a lot of eyeballs. It's, you know, every place is, you know, high traffic. But if you live in a medium to small size city, those billboards are actually more affordable. And they have, these cities have a lot of private owners, which means that their prices are even better. I searched and searched in Tulsa, and I found a private owner who had their private land with a digital billboard, which makes it even less expensive because you're having a certain second spot of digital that rotates. So I found this owner, and went into contract with him to put a vegan billboard up. This is my first vegan billboard ever, you know, put my money aside to do it. I was really excited. I found a really awesome person from Germany named Sabine, who helped make the graphics for it. And we went into contract, and 2 days before it went live, the private owner wrote me back and said, I have no idea how the Beef Council found out about you, but they bought more rotations than you between your digital rotation on our billboard, and they basically bought out the whole year. So if you see, it's live still right now. Mm-hmm. If you see the billboard, you have a Be Bold, Eat Beef ad, and then you have mine that says Be Humble, Go Vegan. I mean, it says more than Be Humble. It says, mm-hmm, Be Humble, you know, your health issues could be caused from meat and dairy, go vegan. But it is a phenomenal sight to see, and it does show you that, you know, the agriculture industry is paying very close attention to what we're doing.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I was shocked. I mean, I couldn't believe it. It felt like little old me is having the beef industry like rotate ads and you know, in between mine. So that was recent. That was about a month ago.
Yeah, it shows you how powerful they are. And yeah,
so powerful.
So do you want to take our listeners through like what's it like to set up the light, like from, say you're going out on a certain night, what's your a typical night for you?
Yeah, so it usually actually starts in the day where I'm scouting places out, because I have to find a place that has a large wall but also a sidewalk that is a certain distance away to where the size and everything, you know, plays out. And as well as that, if it's a stunt, it needs to be seen over like a freeway. If it's intended for passersby, I have to do it like, you know, during art crawls and art walks. So I spend a lot of time trying to figure out the logistics of where, sometimes more time doing that than actually, you know, the Batman light. But with the equipment, the truth is it's not easy. It's heavy. You have multiple pieces that weigh over 100 pounds. So when I arrive at night, I try very hard to park as close as possible, but there are many times where I can't. And so I'm like carrying a roller cart of over 100 pounds of equipment to my position. Now, you know, the equipment, the stage light, you know, looks very menacing. So does the generator. It looks really kind of scary to some people. And so one time the police were called, and the call they got was saying this girl is pulling out some weapon that looks like a bazooka. So it's like, yeah. So, you know, beyond it being heavy, you know, I'm rolling things across the street, I'm plugging a generator in, and people are watching me during that whole thing, wondering what is that girl doing? I almost think I'm going to buy a decoy microphone, like a mic. Mm-hmm. So I can hold it and people can think maybe I'm putting up a video camera, or like I'm a news person, because I get a lot of scary looks when I'm putting it up.
So your YouTube videos are really engaging. I've been watching them, or your Facebook Live I was watching when you first started, but I've been watching the videos now on YouTube, and I couldn't stop watching because I really want to know what people's reactions are. I'm wondering, what is your most memorable moment?
Yeah, so I have several, because I've done, I would say I've done over 80 vegan Batman lights, and I've probably had 30 police interactions. And then I've had, you know, people try to drive their cars into my equipment. I've had people, business owners, property manager try to run off with my generator. I've had a lot of things, but if I were to say, and you can find all that on YouTube, it is like a reality show sometimes. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll be out there and I'm like, you know, in Tulsa, and they have helicopters circling me and drones circling me, and I'm like, this is like a reality show. But if I were to say the most memorable, I would say it was at a small town outside of Tulsa where I grew up. They had a Christmas parade, so the Sand Springs Christmas parade. The reason it was the most memorable was because I was the most scared, because I was doing it by myself and the parade had blocked all the streets off. So I had to park really far. And so I knew that I was going to have to roll this heavy equipment down a steep hill and around cops everywhere, because cops had blocked off the streets. Mm-hmm. And obviously in a place like Oklahoma, not only is there a huge amount of meat eating, but there's a lot of farmers in these small towns, and there's a ton of hunters. Like, every male is a hunter, and they're all wearing their hunter jackets. So I sat in my car for a really long time just trying to give myself the courage to do it. And I almost didn't do it 100 different times. I delayed, I got nervous, I had to go to the bathroom, and I waited in this long line at this fast food place that doesn't even serve vegan options to go to the bathroom. And every woman was wearing a hunter jacket, and I was so petrified. So a lot of it is overcoming fear, and that's the reason it was the most memorable, because almost every time that I've had the most fear and overcame it has been the best time. So what happened was I rolled that stuff down towards the parade to where both the participants in the parade could see the light as well as the people at the parade. And when I put it up, I had just got these headphones, and I'm like, I called them my heckler headphones, because when I put them up, the first thing you can hear is someone heckling me and saying, boo, we love meat, or go beef, or, you know, the typical thing. And so I had to really listen to a lot of hecklers during that time. But then they stopped, and people really started reading all the messages that I changed. And, you know, in the parade, you had Future Farmers of America floats. You had people in horse carriages and all sorts of things that go against veganism. What made it even most memorable, meaning that beyond the fear and what was the return on investment, right? How many vegans were made? The band members had to circle back around, and when they were done, they came and walked through. And so I had talked to a lot of band members. I was talking to this girl who seemed like she was connecting to the idea of veganism, and you know, but she wasn't emotionally connecting to the things that I was talking about that were emotional. Right at that moment, a woman who was at the parade comes over and is carrying a mini pig, which is her pet. And in that moment, I tell that girl, you know, I say, I mean, you know, think about, like, would you want to hurt this animal right here? And so she comes up to pet the animal, or the, you know, the pig, and the pig, like, starts snorting and making these noises, like kissing, snorting noises, just the cutest little noises. And that girl, like, tears started coming in her eyes. Like, she knew it in that moment. And it just was, like, such a beautiful, like, full circle thing. It was, yeah. It was that, you know, this message is being inserted into a place where there's heavy meat eating, animal abuse, and all of that stuff. And you just can't deny that there are good people that exist amongst all of that. I think that we think that sometimes we think this us versus them, but you could see people changing. And at the end of it all, I even had this family who was meat eaters help me carry my equipment back up the hill and talk to me the whole way. Right. So like, even after all of that, I didn't even have to take my equipment by myself and lug it back up. I had the help of an entire family that just came up to me to offer to help. So
that's an amazing story.
That was most memorable.
Yeah. That gives me goosebumps.
Yeah. I have that one on video on YouTube. I'll have to share it with you. It's a really good one. Yeah, that was the most memorable.
Yeah. How has the vegan Batman evolved since you began artistically? I know you mentioned you're doing other light installations.
Yeah, so a lot of it is more of I'm starting to do vegan street art and not necessarily with the light. And what I mean by that is I've been following the works of Banksy and other street artists. Mm-hmm. And there's just a lot of ways to, you know, my whole premise is encouraging people to go vegan in our sleep. That is the most efficient way. Like, mm-hmm. us having to be standing somewhere on the street is only going to capture an audience during those hours that we're there. I want to make and encourage vegans in our sleep. And so vegan street art is the next evolution of what I'm doing. And I can do that stuff in the daytime. So I've done, you know, different stunts over freeways on like on fences. A stunt that I'm working on doing is a bunch of red padlocks that will spell go vegan to put over a freeway, so that these padlocks, like for someone to take those down, would have to use a metal cutter. There's different ways to print up artwork and paper where you can use like a wheat or flour powder and mix it with water, and then that flour powder and water is like paste, and so then you can paste these pieces of artwork on abandoned buildings. So I'm taking it to the next level to basically be able to do things around the clock, as well as have those messages may be really difficult to take off and, you know, be in really prominent positions and encourage people to think about veganism and their participation in herding animals around the clock.
Awesome. Awesome. I love your ideas. So what have you learned about being a solo female activist?
Yeah, I mean, that's really interesting. So I've tried to encourage people in Tulsa to come, and I get a few people. In Los Angeles, I got more people. One of the things that is key and that people may not realize, it takes a lot of courage. I mean, you are out there in the dark, you're, you know, lugging around equipment, you are having to, you know, be on point with being able to engage with people, as well as to know the legal laws and ramifications and how to talk to cops and, you know, be able to have collateral to hand to people to make them know being vegan is convenient. It's a lot of work. And so, you know, I think that you had sort of toyed with the question about staying safe and things like that. Mm-hmm. I think that the reality is keeping completely safe is almost impossible. What you need to be is just really smart and make sure that, you know, you are watching, watching your surroundings at all times and know when to stop. You know, if somebody is acting out or doing something really bad, you have to know when to stop, because at the end of the day, your activism is important. And, you know, if you're hurt or something like that, then you're no longer capable of doing activism. So I guess I would say that, you know, we women need to high five other women for their activism, because especially if they're doing it solo, you know, they are putting themselves out there in a world of a lot of unsafe things. And so, you know, high fiving them for their courage, I think, is really important.
Yeah. And it's International Women's Day. So what a great idea.
Yeah.
I'd really like to see it. The Animal Rights Conference coming up in June. I'd like to see more women.
I feel the same. So I actually entered in my different topics to, you know, be selected. Someone had told me you can enter in, mm-hmm. So I entered in. There's a lot of topics that I'm really, you know, that I know a lot about besides vegan Batman light. One is about the meat and dairy industry and subsidies or welfare, basically, that goes to them, and how in the USA, at least, you know, everybody thinks they're, you know, in a capitalist society when we just bailed out the dairy industry with $1 billion, but it's not just a bailout. It's that they were allowed to abuse the same amount of cows this year, even though last year they knew their sales were down, and they, and instead of abusing less animals, yielding less milk, they yielded the same amount and had the government spend $1 billion. So I know a lot on other subjects, and I'm with you. I would like to see more women at these veg festivals on panels, and more women invited to these places, because one of the things was, since it's Women's Day, you know, we are a movement of over 70% women, and time again, you see, you know, men in leadership positions and men speaking, and I love that men are involved, but I think it's about, you know, making things relatable to the audiences. And, you know, if we are at 70%, then our speaker panel should be 70% female. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I'm definitely with you. I would love to see women insert themselves into leadership positions, as well as other women supporting them in those leadership positions, in the same way that women would support men in leadership positions.
Yeah, totally agree with that.
Yeah.
So I had a couple more questions for you. About talking to people and keeping your cool. You're so good at that. I was talking to a couple of farmers the other day at a dairy protest, and you know, the same debate came up. The farmer was saying, "Well, what would happen to all the cows?" And it's just like, oh, like, how do you stay hopeful, I guess, in those conversations? Or
yeah, I mean, the way I look at it is, I look back to myself as a non-vegan, and I would have said anything, because your mind is trying to grasp at something to justify what you participate in. Like, you know, a lot of us are born into eating meat, and there's so much indoctrination that happens that we don't even realize, that what happens is, the first time we ever contemplate whether an animal should die or not for us to eat them is when we meet a vegan. So a lot of times what you're experiencing on the street is someone that never contemplated it before, and that is their very first moment of contemplating it. Even if they heard about veganism, they make it sound like we just love carrots versus meat. You know, they don't realize that we are against animal abuse and we don't want to participate in it until you start unraveling it and talking about it. But, you know, to that point, I think it, a lot of times you're meeting people on the street, and it's the first time that they've ever had to contemplate it, and they're trying to come up with a good, smart answer really fast. So it's like, these answers sound so robotic. To your point, it's like, you know, somebody who is in any industry, especially the dairy industry, a farmer should 100% know about supply and demand. So for them to say what will happen with all the cows is robotic. It's mm-hmm. them reaching for something, and it's also them reaching for something to make them feel okay about what they do. You know, so when I was non-vegan, I don't want a vegan to think they are, you know, they've done something better than me, because at the end of the day, I may not have the same information they have. And so my knee-jerk reaction is going to be some sort of defense mechanism. So the reason I stay hopeful is, I just go back looking at myself as a non-vegan, and a lot of things that you hear on the street are knee-jerk reactions. And what you need to do with those knee-jerk reactions is pivot very quickly to find one where they can answer questions like yes or no. Are you against animal abuse? Yes or no. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's animal abuse when animals are sent to slaughterhouses? Yes or no. Would you pay for that animal abuse if the animal is standing in front of you and begging for their life? It's to talk to people kind of like we talk to little kids when we're trying to get them to understand a difficult concept. You want them to tie together what their belief system is, and tie it together with what veganism is, and realize that there's a lot of similarities. It's very rare that you'll find someone that just doesn't give a crap about animals, and find that person that'll say it. Like, I don't care if animals suffer. I don't give a crap about them. I'm going to eat them forever. It's very rare that you're going to find someone that says that, mm-hmm. and that says it on camera as well. So most people, I believe, are good. And I'd say 95% are good and want to change. And most of the times, their knee-jerk reactions are just them trying to grasp for something to sound intelligent.
Yeah, that makes sense. So when I think about the amount of animal agriculture propaganda, like we were talking about, that we consume unwillingly for the most part, the vegan Batman light seems like just like the perfect answer if every city had one. Do you envision that, or
I did originally, and I tried to do a GoFundMe to encourage other cities, and I handed off, you know, a first round of money to Arizona, and they got their Batman light. And then I was trying to find a team of people in Portland and Vegas to take ownership so that, you know, that could happen. The hard part is there's so many custom pieces and then the courage needed to go out, set it up, deal with police. It's like you have to be an expert in six different things. And it's just really hard to find that type of person. So right. I would love for more teams to do it, but I can't, there needs to be more money going into donations. And I think the donations have to go beyond just getting a team equipment. It has to include, like, you know, me spending time with those teams to show them, like, how to deal with cops, how to deal with people, how to set up the equipment, how to customize the gobos. So I would love for that to happen. Micromanaging that, you know, with me having I own my own data company, me having a full-time job, it limited my own activism. So mm-hmm. it's kind of one of those situations where it's like, how can I pull back from the hours I work and have more time and not reduce the time that I'm doing my own activism to get, you know, more groups out there. I have actually given cheat sheets and a lot of time to a lot of different people on messages, and none of them have launched one.
Interesting.
So I think maybe if they get to the point where they get the money to buy the equipment, I think it's kind of scary, you know, to have put yourself out there to that extent. You know, so I think it just would require a lot more training.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm so happy that I had you on the show today, and I love what you're doing. It really resonates with me, and I hope it does with our listeners. Is there anything you want to tell our listeners, like how we can keep following you and see what you're up to?
Yeah, so, you know, on I just launched a YouTube channel. The YouTube channel mostly compiles the last year of Facebook Live videos that I've done, but I also touch on subjects like the one that I was talking about, the dairy industry bailout, and about how, you know, our veganism in the U.S. actually didn't change the fate of animals, and how to remain hopeful for that, and talks about ideas on how we need to change this, and understanding that, you know, politicians, there are a lot of farmers that turn into politicians that most of us aren't aware about, that have the agriculture industry has inserted them into politics, and how we need to understand that and have that mapped out, because those are the guys that are putting these bills up and getting these bailouts and getting money in their back pocket. But anyways, I touch on subjects like that on YouTube. I'm very, very comfortable speaking in front of groups and people. And so I think YouTube allows me to do that to a different audience than Facebook does. And so YouTube is a great place. You can see all those reality show type, episodes, I guess you will, of Vegan Batman Light. So the URL for that is www.youtube.com/C/Vegan Batgirl, or you can search Vegan Batgirl. There's videos that have been picked up by these, police auditing groups that are kind of interesting. You see a lot of their comments on my pages. They're basically people that videotape police infringing on people's rights or things like that. And so I've actually been circled around that group of people. So, and then the other way, Instagram, I have an Instagram account that I put a bunch of the pictures from the different nights of Vegan Batman Light. And so that is, vegan_Batgirl. And then on Facebook, you have a Vegan Batgirl group as well. So that one is www.facebook.com/groups/Vegan Batgirl. So those are the three ways on social media. And then I have a website, which is easy. It's www.veganbatgirl.com. And you can get to know more about my work, from the billboards to the Batman light, as well as I always need donations. You know, I don't need donations to support my livelihood. The donations just help me multiply what I do. And, you know, it's always really great to see people support me there, because then you can see the work that your money donations has, you know, led to.
Yeah, I think it's awesome what you're doing. So thank you so much, Vegan Batgirl, for being on the show.
Thank you for having me, Jillian. It was a pleasure.
Okay, talk soon.
Yeah, bye.
Bye.
You have been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Please join us on our next show. Allison,
yeah, what do you got? Next week, I'm excited to be having Erin Ireland on the show. She is a popular local vegan food reporter. She'll be speaking about her vegan activism, the power of food media, and giving some vegan parenting tips.
Ooh. We're closing the show now with a song by Janelle Monáe featuring Erykah Badu called Queen. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
It's hard to stop rebels that time travel. But we at the Time Council pride ourselves on doing just that. Welcome to the Living Museum, where legendary rebels from throughout history have been frozen in suspended animation. Here in this particular exhibit, you'll find members of Wonderland and their notorious leader, Janelle Monáe, along with her dangerous accomplice, Badula Oblongata. Together, they launched Project Queen, a musical weapons program in the 21st century. Researchers are still deciphering the nature of this program and hunting the various freedom movements that Wonderland disguised as songs, emotion pictures, and works of art.